Not lately, though. Lately, nothing seems like enough.
Shut up, Edie. I mean it.
He says under his breath, through his teeth. Edie, I hear behind me. I turn around quickly, lose my balance. Kaylin grabs my arm. I shrug it off. We've been looking for you. It's Mara with Cameron and Steve trailing behind. What's wrong? She asks, looking back and forth between me and Kaylin.
What's wrong, Mara?
Kaylin shouts.
Neither of you should be here.
Then he stares down Cameron and Steve.
And who the hell are you?
I decide to make the introductions. Kaylin, this is Cameron, Mara's boyfriend, and he's so wonderful and dreamy and he doesn't need to get wasted to have a good time. You'd like him. He's the designated driver. And this, I throw my arm around Steve's shoulder. This is Steve, but you don't have to worry about Steve. Don't let his appearance fool you. He may look like an ordinary guy, but he's just a shy little dork underneath. Right, Steve? I turn my head to look at him, but my feet follow and my body sways into his. I grip onto his shoulder tighter, trying to balance, and he pulls me up straight. See? I laugh. What I'm saying is, Steve is a nice guy, Kaylin. Such a nice, decent guy. But, I shout, pausing to catch my breath. But he did invite me to his dark room, and he's my date. My date, Kaylin. Yes. I came here with a date. I feel Steve slither out from under my arm, but I don't take my eyes off Kaylin's face. I want to memorize everything about his reaction.
Edie, please, please, please just shut the fuck up,
he screams. I record it. Try so hard to brand it all into my brain, his cheeks turning pink, the vein in his temple pulsing, his voice unsteady, his hands shaking. The way he's losing control. Hey, hey now. Mara starts to defend me. No, it's okay. I scream, louder than I meant to. Kaylin is just having some trouble dealing with the fact that his sister's a big whore. Right, Kay? That's what it is, right? Or is there something else that's bothering you? He looks at me for just a moment, really at me, and he looks so angry. Angry enough to hit me, maybe. I almost wish he would. Because that would feel better than being eternally ignored by him. Better than being made to feel like I'm just some inconsequential speck of dust, dirtying up his otherwise immaculate life. But then the moment passes as quickly as it came. He doesn't see me anymore.
Look, she is way too drunk,
he says, turning to the three of them.
Can you guys get her home or not?
He asks, pretending I don't exist, a game he plays even better than basketball.
Yeah, man. Sure. We will, I promise.
Cameron says, nodding his head all serious and responsible-like. I feel like screaming, go fuck yourself, to everyone within earshot. Kaylin, Cameron, Steve, Mara even. The people standing around staring at us. Rachel, that would-be 16 guy. Kevin, if he's around, which I'm sure he is. Kaylin walks away. Doesn't look at me. Doesn't say another word. Just walks away from me. Everybody gives me these sideways looks of uncomfortable pity, like I had just lost some really important game. Whatever it was that we were playing, they all seemed to think I was the loser. I wasn't. He lost. He was the loser. They were all losers. Not me. Are you okay? Mara asks me, touching my shoulder. Yeah, of course, I snort. I'm tough. I can take it. So what? Honey, you're crying, she says, looking worried. I am not. That's ridiculous. But I rub at my eyes with the back of my sleeves and it leaves two dirty black streaks from my mascara. She never cries, she tells Cameron and Steve.
I can hear you and I'm not crying. Maybe my eyes are watering for some reason, but not because I'm crying, I shout.
Nobody really says much the whole way home. Kaylin doesn't speak to me at all the next day. Needless to say, we don't have our special brother-sister outing like he wanted, and he's gone by the time I wake up Sunday morning. And then nobody really says much to me in school on Monday, or Tuesday, or Wednesday. I don't care if Cameron doesn't talk to me. I honestly don't care if Steve doesn't talk to me. And Mara?
It can't rightfully be said that she's ignoring me. She just doesn't seem particularly happy that I exist.
All right, so why is everyone being weird? I finally ask Mara in the hall by her locker on Thursday.
What do you mean? She mumbles, not even glancing up at me. Ever since the party, no one's been talking to me. I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah, barely.
Well, can you really blame them? You were so mean, Edie.
Not to you, I wasn't.
No, but you made fun of Cameron.
She pauses, waiting for me to react.
And Steve, you know, he actually liked you, and you were horrible to him.
I was not. Not horrible. If he was stupid enough to actually like me, then that's his problem.
Edie, you obviously ditched him to go hook up with some other guy. But I guess he's just a little dork, right? So who cares anyway? She says, rolling her eyes.
Well, when you say it like that, it sounds mean, but that's not what I meant. That's not how it happened. Not really.
She just crosses her arms and shakes her head.
I was drunk, Mara. I didn't mean anything by it. You know that.
Yeah, exactly. She inhales sharply. And I really think you have a problem, Edie.
What, a drinking problem? I don't drink that much. You drink more than I do. She slams her locker shut, all exasperated, like it's such a big project to talk to me.
No, that's not what I mean. Not a drinking problem, but you have some kind of problem. You didn't mean anything by it, right?
Yeah, that's what I said, I snap, getting impatient.
But you never mean anything.
So?
I wish to God that she would just say what she means instead of having me jump through her psychological hoops. So nothing ever means anything to you. You're just out there lately, Edie. Way out there. It worries me.
Out where? What are you talking about?
Like, I don't know. I just feel like you're about to go over the edge or something.
Her fingers walk an imaginary line through the air, and then she lets her hand plummet downward, like she's enacting her hand falling off a cliff. You're completely overreacting. She shakes her head firmly back and forth.
No, you're out of control this time.
Really?
You know you're acting crazy. Crazy for you, even.
Where is this coming from? I drink a little too much, and then I'm not perfectly polite to your little boyfriend, and now all of a sudden I'm crazy?
Edie, just stop. You know what I'm talking about. It's everything.
I feel my face contorting into a smirk. That really condescending way Kaelin does it that makes me want to punch him in the mouth just to shatter that stupid crooked line of his lips.
Thanks for the concern, I snarl, but I can take care of myself just fine. Edie?
The corners of her mouth turn down in that way that means she's trying not to cry but is going to start any second.
I don't like you like this.
Like what? I ask, not nicely. It pushes her over the brink.
You're not thinking right, and you're going to get hurt.
She has to say it really fast so she can get it all out before the tears.
Please, listen, okay?
Then she takes a breath, and just like that, her eyes are full to the brim, just on the cusp of spilling over. Then one drop rolls down, then a whole army of them, like rain on glass. She cries, and then, because I'm such a great friend, I just walk away. It's after midnight. The snow is falling hard outside, the wind howling. I can't sleep. Can't get comfortable. Goddamn lumpy sleeping bag. I turn my head and my eyes focus on my 9th grade yearbook, sandwiched between the floor and the leg of my desk, leveling it out. I pull on it from the flimsy spine. It releases easily, and the desk rocks forward without its support. I absently flip through until I reach the clubs and organizations section. Lunch break book club. Miss Sullivan posing behind the circulation desk, her glasses pushed down to the tip of her nose, her index finger in front of her lips making the shush face. The six of us stood around her, three on either side, each of us making our most angelic faces and holding out 6 shiny red apples for her. Very nerdy. So very, very nerdy. It was my idea. Steve had set up the tripod with his camera exactly where I had marked with masking tape on the floor. And I was a stickler about the apples, too. Cortland, Empire, Gala,
Macintosh, and Red Delicious were permitted, but no Ginger Gold or Golden Delicious and absolutely no Granny Smiths would be allowed in any yearbook picture I was orchestrating. I even sent out an email to that effect so no one would show up with the wrong apple and fuck up my picture. I guess that was the beginning of the end of lunch break. But if there were a contest for best group photo that year, Lunch Break Book Club would have won by light years. I compare the grainy gray hues of our apples. They match perfectly. A yellow or green one would have thrown the whole thing off. I'm sure of it. I examine it more closely. Everyone's goofy faces. Steve's chubby cheeks. Mara's sincerity. Miss Sullivan playing along. And then there's me. It's me in a ponytail and my old glasses. And I have this smile on my face. But it's all wrong because there's this look in my eyes. This dull, dead darkness, like something is missing. I can't say what, but that missing something is something important, something crucial, something taken, something gone now, maybe for good. I flip to the sports section, boys varsity basketball. He'd been sitting there in the back of my mind like someone incessantly tapping on my shoulder, ever since the night I found myself outside his house. I shoved him back into his corner where he belongs, but now I have to look. I can't ignore him anymore, not when I'm this close. I trace my finger over the faces, and there he is, in his number 12 jersey. Josh. My heart thumps hard and fast the way it used to. I force my eyes to close. I force my fingers to turn the page so I can't look at his face again, so I won't see his name listed there. So I can go back to forgetting all about him for the rest of my life. Instead, I flip to the ninth grade section to visit the ghost of that girl I used to be. And there she is, right between Maureen Malinowski and Shawn Michaels, glasses and all, a stupid innocent smile plastered on her stupid innocent face. That picture was taken on the very first day, the first day of high school, the day I thought her life was about to begin. How could she have known her stupid, pathetic, flat-chested days were numbered? I envy her, that awkward, not quite ugly, not quite pretty girl. Wish I could start over. Be her again. I look deeply into her eyes as if she holds some special secret, a way to get back to her. But her eyes are just pixels. She only comes in two dimensions. She doesn't know shit. I start out grinning, grinning because of the irony, and then I snicker a few times, shaking my head back and forth. Then I'm laughing, laughing because of the absurdity, and then I have to use both hands to cover my mouth because I'm laughing so hard, and then I have to use both my hands to cover my eyes because they're crying, crying because of the atrocity of it all, of regret and time and lies and not being able to do anything about any of it. Only now I can't remember, damn it, where the lies ended and I began. It's all blurred. Everything suddenly seems to have become so messy, so gray, so undefined and terrifying. All I know is that things went terribly awry. This wasn't the plan. The plan was to get better, to feel better by any means. But I don't feel better. I feel empty. Empty and broken still. And alone. More alone than ever before. I feel these forbidden thoughts creep in sometimes without warning. Slow thoughts that always start quietly, like whispers you're not even sure you're hearing. And then they get louder and louder until they become every sound in the entire world. Thoughts that can't be undone. Would anyone care? Would anyone even fucking notice? What if one day I just wasn't here anymore? What if one day it all just stopped? What if... What if? What if?
Edie? Vanessa says, pushing my bedroom door open. I asked you 10 times very nicely to go out and shovel. It started snowing Wednesday night, and then on Thursday school is canceled, work is canceled, life is canceled, trapping me in the house with Vanessa and Connor all weekend. There's a driving ban for the entire county,
and everyone's cars are buried under 2.5 feet of snow that is only getting deeper and deeper with every hour that passes. I really just want to ignore her, because she has, in fact, interrupted me about 20 times already, not 10, to bother me about shoveling. What the hell are snow days for, anyway? What would be so wrong with just sitting at my desk pretending to do homework while I drown in the sheer rightness of a day off? I take my headphones out of my ears and look up at her like I didn't hear. Huh? What are you working on? She asks, trying to smile at me. Homework. English, I lie. Well, do you think you could take a break? Your father shouldn't be out there this long. Then why doesn't he just come in? I counter. Edie, I'm asking you, she tells me firmly. Yeah, but it doesn't even make sense to be shoveling during the snowstorm. Doesn't it make more sense just to shovel after it stops? None of our neighbors are out there shoveling right now. Why do we always have to do this? No, why do you always have to do this? She points her finger at me. Then I watch as she takes a deep breath like she does when she's trying to calm herself. Watch as she takes one deliberate step backward. I wonder if she's afraid she might slap me. What I'm saying is, she begins again, more restrained, why can't you just do what I've asked? You know, why do you have to challenge everything I say, Eden? I don't understand. I'm not there you go again, she accuses, waving her hand at me. She starts getting that look in her eye, the one that gives its victim the sense that everything's wrong with the world. War, famine, global warming, is her fault. This is exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not challenging anything. God, I'm just pointing out the obvious. Why should we have to shovel all day long instead of just once? She throws her arms up and walks away, muttering to herself. I can't take it anymore. I can't. I just can't. Fine, I call after her, tossing my book down against the desk. I'll go out there even though it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. By the time I shovel to the bottom of the driveway, the cold has infiltrated my core, but it's invigorating somehow. I look out, squinting my eyes so that my vision blurs beyond the identical houses and cars and streets and trees, until I am the center of this frozen nowhere suburbscape. I refocus my eyes and turn around to look at the house. At the rate the snow is falling, it looks like I never even started shoveling. The cars are still blocked in, and my extremities now feel like they are about to fall off. And somehow, this satisfies Vanessa. Thank you, she says when I come inside with icicles dripping from my eyelashes. It doesn't even look like I did anything. That's not really the point, is it? She smiles, licks her index finger, and turns the page of her magazine. Isn't it? I ask, hanging up my coat on the hook by the door. Isn't what? She says absently. The point, I reply. Of shoveling? Oh, well. She places her finger on a word and looks up from the magazine, stares into space for a moment, squinting her eyes like she's thinking of something to say to me. I stand there, in actual suspense, waiting. But then her eyes refocus on the dingy wallpaper and she swats her hands in front of her face, like she's shooing some annoying insect. She goes back to her magazine, never finishing. I send myself to my room, lock myself in, crack the window, and light a cigarette. I've never smoked in my house before. I was always afraid they would smell it and they would be disappointed in me yet again. Nobody was noticing anything, though. She couldn't even be bothered to finish a sentence. After dinner, Vanessa knocks on my door, asks if I want to help decorate the tree. I don't answer. I close my eyes and cover my ears and will her to just please walk away. She doesn't ask a second time. As I sit on my bedroom floor smoking cigarettes, listening to the sound of the TV under my door and the rustling of Christmas ornaments being unwrapped and unpacked, I have this intense longing to call Mara, to make up with her and just say whatever words I need to say to put things back in place. But I know the only way to do that is to apologize to Steve first. I shake my head as I reluctantly dial his number. It only rings once before he picks up. Steve, hey, it's Eden.
I know,
is all he says. I pause, consider hanging up. Look, I'm sorry about the party, I finally tell him. Silence. Sorry if I was a jerk. I try. I was messed up. Sorry. Finally, he sighs into the phone.
It's okay. You know, I get it.
Thanks, Steve. Well, I'll talk to you-
So what's going on?
He interrupts before I can say goodbye.
I mean, what have you been up to? All this crazy snow?
He asks awkwardly. He wants to keep me on the phone. Not much, I answer, suddenly realizing I kind of want to be kept on the phone.
Yeah, me neither.
Silence. Well, what are you doing now? I ask him. I ring the doorbell at Steve's house. I don't know yet what it is I really want from him. I only know that I couldn't stand to be in my house another minute.
Hey.
He answers the door with that warm, shy smile that never fails to make me feel bad for not being nicer to him. I look at him and wish, just for a second, that I could be the kind of girl who could like him. Really like him. Sometimes I wonder how hard it would be to pretend.
Come in, come in.
He tells me. I take my coat and my boots off in the entryway of his house. Everything's neat and clean and quiet. The house is laid out the exact same way as Josh's house was, just in reverse. But then again, most of the houses in our neighborhood are exactly the same. There are only about 3 or 4 different versions.
Can you believe we actually got a snow day?
He says.
It looks like they're probably going to close tomorrow, too, my father said. He just called from work. He said the roads aren't cleared yet at all, so...
He drifts off.
Anyway, I'm so glad you called. We can go up to my room. I'll show you my photo stuff. I mean, if you're really interested.
Yeah, definitely, I lie. I follow him up the stairs to his room the way I used to follow Josh up the stairs to his room, then down the familiar hallway, a familiar floor under my feet.
So this is it,
he says, holding his arms out as we stand in the middle of his bedroom. Except all I can see is Josh's bedroom when I look around. And instantly Josh is there again in my mind, taking up all the space, consuming all the thoughts, making my heart go wild. I can hardly breathe. I find myself, for once, not wishing that I were the one who was different, that I were someone else, but that Steve were someone else, that Steve was Josh, that Josh was here instead of Steve, but feeling the way Steve feels about me. But that's not what's real. That's not what's happening. In fact, nothing is happening. And I realize abruptly that is the problem. I need something to happen. Need to make something happen. Anything. Now. I close his door behind us and turn around to face him.
What?
Steve asks, looking at me, alarmed, confused, as I walk toward him.
What are you doing?
Come here, I say, reaching out for him.
What?
He says slowly. It's okay. Just come here. Cautiously, his hands reach out to meet mine, but he still looks uncertain. And then something passes over his face. He just got it. He moves in to kiss me, but stops, like he needs permission. It's okay. I promise, I whisper. So I close my eyes, focus everything in my mind and my body on pretending that the boy I'm kissing is Josh. And that I am some better version of myself, the girl I used to be, the one that Josh once felt the need to say, I love you to. I kiss him, pull him toward me. He kisses back. I pour myself into it, but I don't feel any different. I need more to happen. More, damn it. I back him up to his bed, and he pulls me on top of him, but this isn't enough. I start to move my hands down his chest and stomach, but he grabs my hands as my fingers touch his belt. He stops kissing me altogether.
Wait, 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 Edie.
He whispers, holding my hands in his.
What are we doing?
He asks, with his eyes darting back and forth between mine, searching melodramatically. It's okay. I promise. I really, really want this to happen. But that's such a lie, I feel like I'm close to pleading.
Well, me too.
He whispers.
But let's go slow. We have time, right?
He smiles. I nod, but I barely even understand him. Time? Time for what? This is urgent. There's no time at all. We need to do this right now. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get anything.
He kisses me and touches my hair and my face like he means it. In fact, he doesn't touch me anywhere else at all. It feels like this goes on forever. And with every second that passes, the less I can pretend, the more real this becomes, the less like Josh I can make him. I get a sick, churning sensation in my stomach because I'm using him bad. Between kisses, he whispers all kinds of things to me in my ear, like romantic, sweet things.
I've never known anybody like you, Edie. You just don't care what people think. That's so amazing. That's so cool.
But the more he talks, the more I'm just thinking of ways I can get out of this. How can I get out? How can I get out? I repeat in my mind, over and over.
You're so pretty and interesting and smart.
Steve, please. I have to stop him there. I am not. Smart girls don't get themselves into mess after mess after mess.
Yeah.
He starts again, but I stop him. I'm not any of those things, okay? I tell him more firmly.
Yes, you are.
Pulling me closer, he doesn't seem nervous anymore, not scared.
I've liked you since we were in the 9th grade with the Columbus Project, and then the library thing, remember?
Lunch break, I mumble absently, maneuvering myself so that my back is facing him. At least this way I don't have to look him in the eye while I calculate my exit strategy. He reaches his arms around me from behind, his hands crisscrossing over my stomach. My skin wants to crawl off my body.
You know, I wouldn't even do the reading for my classes, but I would read all those stupid books cover to cover just so I would have something to talk to you about. And I feel like such an idiot because I never understood any of it, but you always did.
Wow, I whisper, looking at the window, not through it, but at the glass, at the many snowdrifts caught in the corners of the window, the condensation trickling down. It all makes me feel like I could cry, because in my heart, I know I'm not who he thinks I am, not even close, and he's not who I want him to be either.
I'm so glad this is finally happening.
He whispers,
I really want to get to know you now, Edie. For real. I want to know everything, like, what are your interests? What do you like to do? What kind of music do you listen to?
I shrug. He says,
favorite movie?
I can't do this.
Okay, how's this? What are you thinking about when you get quiet all the time?
I have to concentrate all my energy on not allowing myself to cry.
Edie?
He pulls his arms around me tighter and tighter. What? I finally answer. He moves my hair and kisses the back of my neck.
Just, I don't know, tell me anything.
I can't. I hear my voice and it sounds so wrong, like that's not what I'm supposed to sound like. I feel my body curl into itself a little more, pulling away from him.
What is it?
He asks.
What's wrong?
That's it. I break out of his arms and turn around. I sit up straight, ready to have a face-off. Steve, will you please just shut up? God! He sits up too, looking so confused it makes me want to slap him. I mean, what is wrong with you? Can't we just have fun? You have to ruin it, really? It's almost like he flinches, almost like I really have slapped him, like I hurt him with just my words. Sadly, sickly, that makes me feel a little better, a little stronger. You wanted me to talk, right? Happy now? He starts, but I don't hear the next word out of his mouth because I'm on my feet. I swing his bedroom door open and I run down the stairs. I slip on my boots and my coat. I don't lace or button anything. I just need to get out. Outside in the cold, I look up and wish on the entire universe of stars that I was anywhere. I close them tight, anywhere but here. When I open them, I'm staring at the same sky, standing in the same town I've been stuck in forever, the same middle of nowhere, feeling the same as I did before, only worse. I light a cigarette but only get in a few deep drags before I hear the door screech open, followed by his footsteps shuffling through the snow, then his voice, crushing the delicate silence of the frozen air.
Look, Edie, I don't know what just happened in there.
I keep my back to him. He places his hands on my shoulders.
I really have to go, I tell him, in as even a voice as I can muster. Hooking my shoulders inward, I try to shrug his hands off. He lets go and steps around in front of me, wearing an expression I've never seen on him before. His standard slouching posture straightens as he puts his hands on his hips. He looks bigger than usual, imposing.
I honest to God don't know what I did,
he says, the words cutting the air.
I'm trying to do the right thing, and you're acting like you hate me or something.
His eyes get wider as he speaks, colder. I say nothing. He stands there waiting for me to deny it, getting angrier every second. I fill my lungs with smoke to stall my response, but then he throws his hands up abruptly, letting them fall heavy as they smack down against his thighs. It's like my entire body shudders. My cigarette slips out of my hand and falls to the ground.
I'm just saying that.
He pauses and looks me once over, assessing my face, my body. I try to recover, try to act like I'm okay.
What do you think?
He says slowly.
I would hit you or something?
I shake my head no, but my mind isn't sure anymore. Of anything, or anyone.
Oh my God, what kind of person do you think I am, Edie?
He says, voice raised. But I don't know what kind of person he is. Hell, I don't even know what kind of person I am. I feel myself backing away.
I wouldn't,
he says after I don't answer.
I can't believe I have to tell you that. I would never do anything like that.
Fine. Yeah, I know.
Wait, I'm just trying to explain,
he continues, stepping closer, but I can't even begin to listen. I nod my head in agreement to whatever it is he might be saying.
So does that make sense?
He finally finishes. He reaches out to touch my face. My hair, maybe, I don't know. I can't help but flinch away from him.
Jesus, Edie, you're not scared of me, are you?
Yes. I hear the word exit my mouth and my heart freezes. Because it's the truth. His mouth drops open. I mean, no. I try to fix it. I try, but it's too late. I'm shaking. My fingers fucking tremble. Christ. I meant no. I'm not scared. I'm trying, but I can't breathe. Like I have bricks on my chest. Just so. And suddenly, so fucking. And I'm crying. Tired. There's no way to hide it. I'm just tired, okay? I blather. So fucking tired. And I don't feel like having some big fucking conversation, that's all. I cry out, near screaming, near hysterical. He says nothing. I cover my eyes. I'm crying with my whole body, and all I want to do is disappear. I feel his hand hesitate, hovering over my back, then rubbing awkward circles, and then his fingers in my hair. If he's saying anything, I don't hear. All I can hear is my blood rushing and my heart drumming in my ears. A pulsing in my throat, like there's a big jumbled ball of words stuck in there dying to get out. He puts both arms around me, but I feel suffocated. Don't want to be held. Don't want to be touched. Not by anyone ever again in my entire life. I crunch my teeth together to keep myself from screaming. Screaming in general. Screaming at him to get his hands off me. Screaming for help. Screaming because I can't make sense out of anything that is happening, has happened, will happen. Screaming because I still feel like I'm back there. Always back there. In my heart, I'm still that girl. I clench my fists tight and tell myself, no more tears, stupid fucking baby. On three, go. One, two, push. Push my body. Push him. Push. Just push. Three. I break out of his arms like an explosion. He stumbles backward, but I'm free. I'm walking away. He grabs the sleeve of my coat.
Edie, come on.
I snatch my arm away from him the second I feel his hand on me. Don't touch me! I only realize I've screamed it as my words echo back at me, reverberating against the trees and the dark and the cold. He looks around, panicked, thinking maybe the neighbors are going to hear.
Don't be mad,
he says, reaching for me again. I'm not mad. Just don't. Don't touch me, okay?
My words shake as they hit the air, my mouth never having demanded such things before. He holds his palms out in front of his chest.
Fine, fine. I'm not.
We stand there staring at each other.
So what happens now?
He asks. You go in, I leave. I try to be stoic about it, try to pretend I didn't just have a total meltdown in front of him.
I mean, what happens with us?
Us. God, I can't answer that question, and I think he knows it too because he changes his face, his tone, and asks instead.
Look, are you okay?
I really have to go, Steve, I say impatiently, careful not to look him in the eye.
Okay. So we're okay? We'll talk tomorrow?
Sure.
Okay, I'll call you tomorrow.
He tries to smile. I try to smile back.
Wait. I want you to know, Edie, I would never hurt you.
He leans in slowly and brushes his lips against my cheek softly. Okay, I whisper, terrified. More terrified than I've been in a long time, of anything or anyone.
Okay,
he says.
Well, good night.
Good night, I repeat, moving away from him. Eden? Mom knocks on my door, tries to turn the knob. I open my eyes. Pray it's all been a dream. I fumble for my phone. 1:43 p.m. I've been asleep for 15 hours. 10 missed calls. Yeah, I moan, trying to scroll down the list. Mara, 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 Steve, Cameron, Steve, Cameron, Steve, Steve, Steve. Shit, shit, shit. Eden? She calls again. I said yeah, I shout. Don't make me get up, Vanessa. Please.
I'm not going to holler through the door, she hollers through the door.
I drag myself up, dust myself off, whatever, shove the sleeping bag under the bed and throw my pillow on top, unlock my door. You have a visitor, Vanessa whispers, tight-lipped. Some freaky-looking guy. What? Cameron something or other. Do you know this boy? She tilts her head so I can see him standing in the center of our living room, opening and closing his mouth. He's playing with his tongue ring, another stupid, annoying thing about him that I hate. Shit, I breathe.
Eden,
she scolds. I stare at the straight line of her mouth.
Well, she says, resigned. Your father's out and I was just leaving to go to the store. Do you want me to stay? I don't like the look of him,
she murmurs, casting a glare over her shoulder. Is he...
Will you be... He's not dangerous, right? He's your friend?
The thought of her being worried about leaving me alone in the house with a dangerous boy is just so laughable I could throw up. It's fine, I mumble, my tongue and lips dry as paper. Or maybe it wouldn't be fine, but I don't need witnesses for whatever is about to go down. Would you just tell him I'll be out in a second? I slip past her, locking myself in the bathroom. My heart starts beating erratically. I will not cry. You will not cry, I whisper to myself. I wash my face and brush my teeth, try to tug a brush through my hair, which is in knots. I hear muttered goodbyes and the front door closing. I pull my hair tight into a ponytail. No, looks like I care what I look like. Looks like I'm trying. I take it out and carefully pull it into a sloppy bun.
You can't pick up a phone?
He blurts out while I'm still shuffling into the living room. I can. I mean, I'm capable, if that's what you're asking.
Oh, okay, you just won't?
He says, all jittery from trying to restrain himself. I cross my arms, shrug, absently pulling at a loose thread on my sleeve. A subtle signal that I can barely even be bothered to have this conversation.
You're unbelievable. He doesn't deserve this. I mean, you do know that, don't you?
I roll my eyes.
You know, I told him a girl like you would just destroy him, because girls like you...
Girls like me? I laugh. Where have I heard this speech before?
I don't know what the hell he ever saw in you. I really don't.
Come on. It's pretty obvious what he saw, what he wanted. He had his chance, right? And he kind of blew it, sorry to say.
Bullshit.
He spits the word before I've even finished my sentence.
Don't pretend you actually believe that. Unless you really are that heartless. Are you? I mean, are you really?
There's this vein in his forehead that throbs every time he raises his voice. Stone-faced, I mumble, guess so.
Yeah?
He asks, vein bulging, fists clenched at his sides.
'Cause you're so tough, is that right? You're just so tough?
I grin, let out a sigh. What a dick. He's not getting to me. He's not. He takes a step toward me. I resist the instinct that tells me to back up, to run. But I do some quick physics in my head. Mass, volume, density. I could maybe take him. Sure, he's taller, but scrawny. We'd have to weigh about the same. Yeah, if push came to shove, I could take him.
So that's why you were crying? Because you're what? Tough?
He asks with his cool smirk. Or maybe he could take me. I inhale a breath of something that doesn't feel like air, and then can't seem to remember how to exhale. My eyes can't hold their stare. They look down, the stupid cowards.
Yeah, he told me about that.
He continues.
He told me everything. He said that he was trying to be nice and you were being a bitch.
He pauses, letting the word cut through the air.
Well, I'm paraphrasing here because you know Steve wouldn't actually call you a bitch even if you are one, even if that's what he was thinking. Yeah, he said you started crying. Crying like a little...
Oh, I'm back. Just shut the fuck up, Cameron. You don't know. You just don't even know, so stay out of it. I can hardly take in enough breath to keep myself speaking. You want to talk about pretending to be tough? Take a look in the mirror. You think you intimidate people the way you look? You think you're tough?
No, I never said I was. I hope I don't intimidate people, but that's the difference between you and me, isn't it? You want to take people down. You want to hurt people, but you know what?
He sneers, inching toward me. I swear to God I'll hit him right in the face if he comes any closer. What? The word comes out strangled, not tough, not fierce, not the way I meant it to.
Nobody's afraid of you,
he says quietly, reserved, restrained, and suddenly in complete control of his emotions. I swallow hard. I'm losing my shit here, because I know he's right. I know it's true.
You're so weak and scared, it's pathetic.
He smiles, cocks his head to one side.
What?
He pauses, cruelty dripping off the silence.
You don't think people can see that?
Get out. My voice shakes.
You think you're such a mystery? You're completely transparent. I see right through you.
Leave, I demand.
You're toxic. You know, you just spread around your bullshit everywhere you go. It's so pathetic. I almost feel sorry for you. Almost.
I had no idea Cameron could be so mean. Somewhere, a small part of me almost admires him. Almost. You don't even know me. How can you?
Oh yeah, I do.
He interrupts.
I know all about you.
I shake my head. No, I can't speak.
I'll go now.
He backs away.
So you can cry. Alone.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
He raises his arm and waves.
Sure.
Fuck you! I scream at his back. Fuck you! I pick up the ceramic coaster sitting on the end table, the closest thing to my hand, and chuck it at the door as it closes. Back in my room, I pull my sleeping bag out from under the bed, toss and turn a few times. Then I'm up on my feet again. Rolling the sleeping bag into a ball, I throw open my closet door and shove it in. It flaps out. I kick it, kick, and kick, and kick at it. I throw myself on the floor and push it back in, over and over, but it just keeps stumbling out again. Next, the avalanche of papers, boxes, a toppling in slow motion stack of old clothes that no longer fit, a fleet of stuffed animals, a fucking stupid, useless clarinet. I lie down on the pile and try as hard as I can to stop crying. I stay in my room all day, all night. I skip dinner. Steve texts me at 11.
please don't do this. He calls and leaves another voicemail at 11:44, and again at midnight. I turn my phone off. I get there first, before the bell. I'd been dreading it all day. Study hall. Then the three of them walk in together like a gang against me. Next, it's Amanda. Mara marches up to our table. You're not sitting here. No way.
It's okay,
Steve says, setting his stuff down. No, it's not, Steve. I've had it with her shit. Mara yells at him. Then to me, move. Fine. I stand and scan the room. Amanda nudges the empty chair next to her toward me with her foot. I think she even tries to smile, but it looks more like a facial tic.
If everyone will please take their seats. Come on, Edith. Take your seat, please.
Mr. Mosner smiles at me impatiently. I don't even have the will to correct him. Edith, I could just die. I sit next to Amanda, pretending that it's a free world and I can sit wherever I damn well please. I glance sideways at her. Then I look at her friends. There's Snarky Girl, of course, and the boy who always looks completely baked, and the girl who looks like a bleached-out negative version of Amanda. Blonde to her black, pasty to her tan, blue eyes to her brown. They all look at me like I'm some kind of alien. I can't take my eyes off the clock. Only 24 more minutes until this period is over and I can get away from Steve and all the hurt feelings he's throwing my way. Away from Cameron and his words that still ricochet around in my head. And from Mara and this bitterness that lodges itself between us even deeper.
Can we talk?
I turn. It's Steve. What, right now? I ask.
Yeah.
He mumbles, glancing uncomfortably at Amanda and her friends who are all staring. He starts walking away toward the door. He glances at Mr. Mosner's back, then motions with his hand for me to follow. I don't know why I do.
So you're just not talking to me now, huh?
He asks once we're in the hall. God, he really hates me. I can feel it in every cell in my body, every nucleus, every fucking ribosome. I'm not talking to you, I just...
What?
He interrupts.
You just what?
I just don't have anything to say. I shrug.
You don't have anything to say? How is that possible? How can you possibly not have anything to say?
He almost shouts. Okay, well, obviously you have something you'd like to say, so why don't you just go ahead?
Fine. It meant something to me. It means something to me. There. I'm not afraid to admit it.
And then he just stares at me, waiting, wishing for me to spit his words right back at him. Okay, Steve, I'll be honest. It didn't mean anything to me. Truth? Lie? I can't even tell anymore. I know I'm being cold and heartless, but I can't stop myself. He touched. He got hurt. He comes back for more. He gets it. Not my problem.
I don't even believe that. I was there, okay? I know that it did.
Look, it's not your fault. It's just the...
What is this?
He interrupts, all jumpy and irritated, shoving his fingers back through his hair, almost like he wants to rip his hair out. What is what?
This. This act,
he says, waving his hand at me. He clenches his jaw and his nostrils flare as he starts to breathe heavier.
What's with this act? What are you doing?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe this works with other guys, but it's different with us, so just stop, okay?
He takes a step closer. I take a step back. Why? Because you think you're different? Don't lie to yourself. You're no different. You are exactly the same. God, this whole damn thing is so fucking predictable, it makes me want to die. My words carry through the empty hall, encircling us, holding us motionless in their orbit. I look at him, turning shades of white, shades of hurt, and I feel my face start to smile.
You know, I can take weird,
he says quietly, the muscles in his face flexing and twitching, then quieter.
I can take fucked up.
And his eyes, they fill with water. Oh, God, his voice shakes.
But you're just a slut.
If words are weapons, if they could wound physically, then he just shot 100-pound cannonball through the center of my body, the kind of artillery built to take out a battleship, and certainly equipped to sink a stupid, mean little girl. In shock and disbelief, I utter the word, "What?" Steve's not supposed to say stuff like that to me. He steps closer. I'm expecting him to scream, which makes it so much worse when he only whimpers quietly.
"You're a fucking bitch, and a slut, and I can't believe I ever thought you were anything else."
The words come out through his teeth, and he's unable to stop the tears, like it hurt him to have to say it even more than it was meant to hurt me. I touch his arm. I don't know what to do. He snatches his whole body away from me, though. "Steve, don't be mad. Don't be hurt by me. Don't leave angry and destroyed. Don't you know I'm not worth it? I want to grab him and hold on to him and tell him I'm sorry. I want to do that even more than I want to run, because Cameron was right. He doesn't deserve this. Steve, please don't."
"Fuck off,"
he chokes out, wiping his eyes on his sleeves. He turns around and starts walking off down the hall past the classroom, getting smaller in the dim light, around the corner, and gone. I walk in the opposite direction. I slink down the stairwell at the other end of the hall, into the dirty, forsaken basement bathroom where there are no windows, but it's still okay to smoke, because no self-respecting teacher would be caught dead in here. I lock myself in. It smells like sewer. Perfect for a mouse. A little rat like me. In the stall, I sink into the floor, press my back against the cold tiles, and light a cigarette. My breathing echoes. I flick the ashes into the stained toilet next to my face. I close my eyes, and I wait. And wait. I think about Josh again. Not anything in particular, just little things. Like the way he would smile at me, or the sound of his voice. The way I could sometimes make him laugh. The way he could sometimes make me feel so good, so free, so myself. How I thought things were so complicated with him. But they were so easy compared to this, compared to everything else. I imagine him coming here, finding me all the way down here in the basement bathroom dungeon like some knight, like some tin man in rusting armor holding a bouquet of dandelions, ready to slay my darkest, most deranged dragons. He'd bust through the door and say something perfect like,
"Baby, what's wrong? Don't cry. Let's get the hell out of here, you and me. I'll take you anywhere. We can run away. We can start over. We can be..."
But something interrupts the fantasy, and suddenly I feel my body again. Gravity pulling me down, anchoring me to the cold cement floor. Something pinches my thigh, bringing me back to reality. Pinching harder and harder. Burning. Damn. No, not pinching. I open my eyes to see that my cigarette has burned all the way down to the filter, causing the cherry to fall off and burn through my pants like acid, right down to my skin. "Shit!" I whisper shout, smacking my leg to try to extinguish the stupidity. Then the bell rings, screaming through the walls and the ceiling, vibrating through the whole building, through me. I wait until the distant noise of shouting and feet running and lockers clanging has passed. I walk back into the classroom to find Amanda picking my backpack up off the floor. She's being so gentle with it, it's unsettling. Everyone else has gone except for her and Snarky. I linger in the doorway, listening. "So you're what, friends with her now? That's seriously fucked," Snarky says under her breath. "Not friends, just, I don't know, I guess I'm trying not to hate her." The way Amanda says her, I know somehow they're talking about me, because I get this pounding in my chest. I freeze, stuck between fight and flight. "I'm trying to be zen, okay?" she continues. "Isn't that what you're always preaching? Even after she... Snarky asks her quietly. There's a limit to being all zen and shit. Amanda shrugs.
I don't want to talk about it.
After I what? I ask, stepping forward. The decision made for me. I'll fight. Amanda turns to look at me, startled.
Oh, nothing, she answers quickly.
No, what? What the hell did I ever do to you? I really want to know.
I would love to know,
I hear myself say, with a little laugh in my throat, feeling close to the edge of something, like I could say anything right now, do anything, and not give a damn about the repercussions.
Just forget it, Amanda tells me, shaking her head, but Snarky pipes up.
You and Kevin.
What?
The word sticks in my throat. Me and Kevin don't belong in the same sentence, in the same thought, in the same fucking galaxy.
Shut up, Amanda snaps at her friend. I was going to pick up your things for you, she says to me.
What are you talking about? I demand from Snarky. I'm talking about you and her brother.
Fucking shut up, Amanda interrupts. I said I don't care.
Doing it, Snarky finishes, looking me up and down like I really am a totally slutty, disgusting whore. I can barely hang on to a thought long enough to get the words out of my mouth.
What?
I never... Why would you say that?
Please, Snarky says with a laugh. It's like just a known thing.
I refocus on Amanda, trying to speak instead of vomit.
You tell people this? Why would you make something like that up?
I'm not making it up. He told me.
She starts to get that hateful look in her eye again. So you don't have to act like, I never, never, I never, you fucking liar. I hate him. I would never. I hate him more than anyone in the entire world. He disgusts me. In fact, you disgust me. You disgust me because you make me think of him.
I'm pointing and thrashing my arms around wildly, and they start to back away from me, I realize, because I'm getting closer.
He said that you and him, Amanda starts to speak, but I can't let her have one more word. I wish he were dead, okay? I hope he fucking dies. Nothing would make me happier than for something really horrible to happen to him. Do you get that?
I'm inches from her face now, can't stop moving toward her.
I mean, do you fucking get that?
I feel something savage and electrical flow through me, like my hands could strangle her, like they're controlled by some part of my brain that's immune to logic. The same part of my brain that's allowing me to say these things, these fucked up things that are just going to give me away. I could just, my hands, reach out, God, for anything, to hurt.
Next thing I know, she's on the floor, and her friend is screaming,
You fucking psycho! What the fuck?
And I'm screaming, I'll kill you if you ever say that again!
Amanda looks up at me, tears rolling down her cheeks. It makes her look just like her 7-year-old Mandy self, but still, I can't force myself to stop.
Don't you ever fucking say that again, do you understand? Not to me, not to anyone, or I swear to God. I swear to God, I'll fucking kill you.
I cry the entire way home from school. I just walk down the streets, sobbing, not caring who sees me or what I must look like or what anyone thinks. I get home and lock myself in my bedroom. I just lie awake, staring at the ceiling. I made Mara cry. I made Steve cry. I made Amanda cry. Anyone who has ever felt anything for me now hates me. After hours of dwelling on this, I've actually made myself physically ill. I don't go to school the next day. Can't face anyone. I'm sick, 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 I tell Vanessa. She feels my forehead and tells me I'm burning up. I just sleep and sleep, and no one bothers me at all. All day and all night, it's just me and my sleeping bag. Drifting in and out of consciousness.
Calm down, honey. It's going to be all right. I promise.
I hear Vanessa say in a dream. In it, I'm crying and she's trying to take care of me, and I'm trying so hard to let her. I open my eyes. A dim light glows through the curtain. My alarm clock says 5:10 a.m.
Everything's going to get straightened out, son.